If you're hearing this, it means tickets are now on sale for our streaming Cybactacular.
That's what we're calling the streaming show of our Star Trek V review that we toured last year. We filmed our Hollywood show, and it's going to be streaming on Thursday, May 16th at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. And the stream will be available for a couple of weeks after that. If you can't watch right at the premiere time. A couple of pieces of information about this. If you support us at MaximumFun.org/join and your membership is current, check your email inbox because Maximum Fun will have emailed you a promo code to get $5 off your ticket. And also, we have some VIP packages available that include a meet and greet with me and Adam. Those are going fast, so jump on that if you want a meet and greet VIP package. Again, it's greatestgentour.com to get your tickets for the streaming Cybactacular.
Here's to the finest crew in Starfleet. Engage.
Captain Jean-Luc Picard of the U.S.
Commander Benjamin Sisko, the Federation Starbase, Deep Space Nine.
Welcome to the Greatest Generation Deep Space Nine. It's a Star Trek podcast by a couple of guys who are just a little bit embarrassed about having a Star Trek podcast. I'm Adam Pranica.
I'm Ben Harrison, and it's a Max Fun Drive episode, and it's also a drunkisode.
You shouldn't believe that those things are related in any way, but look, like we don't have to drink our way through a Max Fun Drive episode. That's not what anyone's saying.
Yeah. And I mean, I guess like in the past, our Max Fun Drive episodes, we've edited out the pledge breaks once we're through the drive because
right.
We want people going back through old episodes of the show to just hear show.
We care about the quality of the show. That might surprise you, viewer, but we really do.
But I just want people to know that that was the situation when this happened.
Oh, so you're saying when you hear totally sober pledge breaks, that's why it'll sound different, yeah?
I don't know. We could record the pledge breaks in this session. We might as well.
Oh, shit. Now, that'll be great. I'm not prepared for that at all.
I mean, what do we have to do? We just have to read off the little PDF that they send us.
Yeah. We'll just give it to John T. Reed.
We are drinking the official beverage of Greatest Gen.
That's right. It is a good mid-level Blanco tequila, ice, and seltzer water.
It's the official beverage of me on any airplane, and the official beverage of Greatest Gen. This is what we drink in the green room before we go on stage, usually.
Before a bully breaks in and pantses us and gives us a swirly, we're usually a couple of these in.
Yeah. This is also a looking at each other during...
It is, because I have moved to Los Angeles.
Yeah.
And I'm doing shows at Ben's house now.
Yeah, well, for the time being. But once you're set up over there.
Oh, no, this is permanent.
Oh, shit.
I'm coming over every time now.
Wow.
Yeah. I'm going to sell all my recording gear. I'm just going to get out of it. Get out of the game.
That's great.
You have all of it.
Yeah. I was thinking about selling my video camera to pay my taxes this year, and instead we're doing another video-based drive goal, so I can't do that.
Oh, I didn't think about that.
Yeah.
I love it. It's a great concept, though. You're going to have to stick around to hear about the great idea we have in store for Max Fun Drive 2020.
Yeah, stick around till 5 seconds from now when we start the pledge break. Nah, we'll start the pledge break once we've been into the episode a little bit.
Yeah, we're
not
making that kind of show. Like the show that's just larded with pledge breaks. So annoying.
It's two pledge breaks. And
we would never do that.
We're going to get through this. Yeah. The way to get through this is to...
The only way out of Max Fun Drive is through Max Fun Drive. And we'll be in it together.
Yeah, it's the Scientology of podcast networks.
Right.
And the only way out is through.
If you don't support Greatest Gen, Friendly Fire, and Greatest Discovery, we'll chain you to a radiator.
Right next to a nice lady named Shelly.
Yeah.
And you guys can get to know each other.
I knew there was a dark secret to our success, Ben. And they serve actually a pretty good brunch.
Yeah. Have you seen Jesse Thorne's triangular-shaped hat before? When you walk into the HQ, it says, "Welcome to Mindhead."
Well, I suppose we should begin this drunkisode, Ben. Yeah. We have a lot of drinking yet to do. This is not a Mourn Hammered episode, so there will be no time element to it. We're just going to socially drink the way we often do and try to recap what I think is a pretty good episode of Deep Space Nine. It's season 6, episode 5, Favor the Bold.
Do you realize how incredible this is? No, of course you don't.
So we open on the little D and it is sputtering. It's clearly having engine trouble, you know.
It's like Spy Hunter when you do the smoke show, smoke screen behind.
I was thinking it's kind of like in like a non urban place. If you have engine trouble, somebody will pull over and help you. But they're clearly in like a they're in
they're
a big
in a
city
tick part of town.
Yeah, they're in a tick part of town. They've got low shields, sending distress signals in every direction. And I think that distress signal thing kind of gave the game away a little bit. Like anybody around is going to know we're in trouble,
right?
Because some ticks come out of the cold, and it turns out, Adam, it's a trap.
Because so does the Rotoran. The Rotoran decloaks and kicks some ass, and then the little D does the same.
Fire.
Then it was faking flaccid.
Yeah.
That's what the little D did. It was hard the whole time.
Why would you need to fake flaccid?
I don't know. Sometimes you're just not feeling like it.
You know, like this, like the deal with synthahol is you can feel drunk, but then you can turn off the drunk.
Mm-hmm.
I wish you could turn off the boner.
Yeah.
There's some times when I don't want it.
I don't have that problem.
Like when I wake up in the middle of the night and I need to pee, but I also have a boner.
Yeah. You just tuck that under the toilet seat, Ben.
You plank the toilet?
Yeah.
I never do it that way.
Hmm.
You know what I do? Tub.
No! Oh, my God.
Because there's no aim. You don't have to aim.
Oh, my God. I've stayed at your home before, Ben, and I've showered in that shower.
Yeah. You know what it's like in there.
I mean, it's
quite clean.
Yeah.
Because I clean up after myself.
Hmm. You don't flush the tub after you use it. You're letting that mellow.
Hmm.
Wow.
I take my sleep very seriously. Gotta get back to sleep.
You're going to want to edit that out, Ben. I guarantee you will.
You're the one editing this episode. So.
I am not editing that out then.
Yeah. So they get the word that they have to head back to Starbase 3, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
And that is a real gut punch to the crew who feel like they just took out a couple of ticks and they want to keep taking the fight to the baddies.
You can't make a streak until you do it a second time.
Mm.
And what we're gathering here is that their wins are so few and far between.
If you make a streak, you're going to need a toilet brush.
Right. But this is one of the rare victories they've had. And so they want the opportunity to run up the score a little bit. They don't get that chance because they're taken back to Starbase 3, whatever.
Yeah.
And Dax rips into Sisko about this.
Yeah,
she doesn't want to fall back anymore.
I really loved the way she was lit in this scene. When she comes into his office where he's desk jockeying, it's kind of a medium single on her just telling him like, hey, like we're fucking sick of the engage retreat.
Mm-hmm.
Morale is super low. We need a big win and soon, because I'm telling you from the boots on the ground perspective, this is not going to work, what we're doing right now.
Benjamin, troop morale is at an all-time low.
Like, just check out this row of power cells we have in our mess hall.
Yeah.
Like, we want to fill an entire cargo bay with these. You're not giving us the chance.
She holds him up to her boobs, and she says, I want everyone to be able to hold a couple of these up to their boobs.
How hard do you think it is for Trills to not just be low-key frustrated during any interaction with anyone in a sort of like, why can't you see all the angles that I see from hundreds of years of life experience?
Hmm.
Why aren't you speaking faster to me? Like to give me the information. I feel like impatience has got to be such a major part of being a Trill for that life experience, right?
Right.
It makes me wonder if that's why Sisko is so accepting of Dax, like, tearing his head off in the scene.
Well, he's kind of slow rolling her, too, because he's already thought of this. So I feel like he's kind of just reveling in her outrage. Like, right. I'm going to let her, like really sink into this so that I can spring this happy news on her and pull her back from the brink. Because he's got a big plan, and that big plan is
we're going to retake Deep Space Nine.
It's the most important piece of real estate in the Alpha Quadrant. Which is
what?
Big news considering yeah. I mean, like it's true, right? Like it's the plug in the butthole, and if the butthole comes unplugged, they're doomed.
All of those ticks are going to go straight into the bathtub.
Yeah.
I love how Sisko's like, oh, I've got a plan, Dax. And it's on this screen facing the window.
Yeah, you're standing next to it.
I mean, you really hope that Sisko has a screen protector that only like allows for seeing it at a certain angle.
Yeah, like the angular screen protector that you see at a car rental at the airport.
Otherwise, setting aside that any letter opener or gee-gaw on Sisko's desk could be a changeling. But what about anything outside the window being a changeling?
Maybe they painted the window with that like reflective coating. Yeah. Or it's like an illegal street tint.
Yeah.
Like more tinted than is allowed by law.
All right, Ben, you and I are taking a brief break to eat our Brode electrolyte vitamins. This is not sponsored content. Lord, you know it would never be sponsored content from Brode, but this is a product that you and I love, and it's something that we take when we know we're going to be doing some drinking.
Yeah.
If you would like to get drinking vitamins of your own, I would recommend you get them, and I would recommend you leave a note telling the Brode company where you heard about them.
That would be great for us. It's very interesting, like, how much Deep Space Nine has come to feel like the center.
Yeah.
And, like, the idea that it's a frontier on the edge of everything kind of place has changed imperceptibly over the last six seasons.
I bet Joe Sisko would have something to say about Earth not being the center of the Federation anymore. I think he would have built his restaurant somewhere else if that were the case.
The opportunity here is to bring them to their knees.
That guy's used to selling out the Federation, so that wouldn't surprise me.
Back on the Little D, Garrick is paranoid in the mess hall about a chip he thinks that has been implanted into his brains by Starfleet.
Yeah. I guess he's been getting debriefed a lot by Starfleet about just Cardassian stuff. And because it doesn't seem like he wasn't like, I mean, in the know about what Gul Dukat was up to. That came as big of a surprise to Garrick as it did to anyone.
This seems paranoid even for him.
Right. But, you know, I would put a listening device in Garrick's head if I was Starfleet.
They need to know everything you know.
Garrick, he's doing that thing of thinking other people are thinking about him a lot more than they actually are.
What he should be paranoid about is openly talking about the plan to retake DS9 at every table in the lunchroom. Why is this not being kept secret at all?
Well, Luz Luke sinks ships unless you're on the ship, right? Like, nobody's going to sink the ship that they're on.
Have they cured the whole what if my coffee mug is a changeling problem that we know to be the case? Did they fix that problem?
I think they're just walking around with phaser sweeps.
That's insane.
That's turned into maintenance, you know? Like, we never see the guy cleaning the toilets on Star Trek, but you have to assume it's happening in the
background. There should have been a Lower Decks episode of DS9 where it's just guys doing that sweep.
Yeah, and it's like the most boring, repetitive job.
Except when they're all murdered in awful ways by the changeling that they find.
It's like, if you don't get killed by a changeling, you're going to have a repetitive stress injury on your trigger finger.
They're wearing the shirts with the tagline on the back, "If you see me running..." Try and keep up. Otherwise, you're going to be killed by a changeling. It's a little wordy, but yeah, it makes sense.
Yeah, it's one of those ones where it builds the text gets smaller and smaller the further down the shirt it goes.
God damn it. Is that another Greatest Gen shirt?
Can we launch a shirt during the drive?
Hell yeah. Hell yeah.
So Sisko pitches this to the brass. They're like, I mean, we're interested in this whole keeping the butt plug in the whole thing, but you know, it seems risky. We're going to be drawing a lot of our defensive forces away from Earth to do this.
I love this McLaughlin group.
Issue one.
Because of the way it's blocked, right? Like, one of the guys has, like, his leg up on a chair and he's holding the belt buckle.
It's a sick belt buckle in a chair.
Another person's sitting down, but very definitely holding the belt buckle with two hands.
Sick belt buckle, bro!
And it's a different belt buckle.
Right?
Sick belt buckle, bro.
They changed the belt buckle the next episode.
You know, they got some notes about the belt buckle,
the
I think.
The belt buckle was controversial.
The belt buckle tested poorly.
It was not, in fact, a sick belt buckle.
No.
A totally sick belt buckle.
It's in this scene that Sisko argues that Earth will be safe because it isn't as valuable as the wormhole.
Right. The wormhole is the key to the Aquad and Earth is not.
This is all about how you play any game, video game, chess, whatever.
Yeah.
Like, if you're the sort of chess player that, like, uses your queen offensively all over the place, mm-hmm. you're the type of person that is going to be willing to sacrifice Earth.
Right.
Which is who Sisko is.
Yeah.
And while at times I am someone who plays the queen that way, I don't know, man. I think if you're leaving the Earth back door open, like, because if you lose Earth, it's truly over.
Yeah. But I think that also this episode does a great job of setting that up and then not really talking about that, but talking about Sisko having kind of gone Bajor, like, in his thinking. Like,
yeah.
Like he, like,
yeah, but you know what? A guy making a strategic plan based on a retirement home he wants to build on Bajor and not elevating this decision to the CNC level.
Yeah.
Like, Earth should be involved in a decision where we're thinking about sacrificing Earth, right?
I must protest.
The decision sort of gets made for them right. later. So it seems like...
Got a lot of belt buckles in that room.
Right.
Like, you get enough of them together, that's equivalent to a Federation president, right?
Sheer fucking hubris.
And I kind of agree with Sisko's argument, like, because Sisko kind of understands the lysine contingency issue that the Dominion is up against, which is that if they run out of that white, they're in big trouble. And the, yeah. and the butthole is the linchpin to all of that. And I don't know if the brass are probably, you know, the generals are always fighting the last war and the Borgs just wanted Earth. So I'm sure that that's what they're preoccupied with.
I do not agree with the strategy. I'm just going to say that right now. I think if the game is lost, if Earth is lost, then you can't just be so flip about making this play.
I think that they're both on a moonshot, but I don't think that the Dominion can afford to try for Earth until that hole is open.
Yeah, I guess that's what Sisko understands.
Yeah.
I don't think he makes that case strongly enough.
He doesn't say it in the room, but I think it's implied. Anyways, on Deep Space Nine, we've got a...
you know what? In one scene, we're talking about whether or not we should sacrifice the Federation homeworld of Earth. In the very next scene, we're on DS9 talking about whether or not Morn should go to his mom's birthday party.
Issues of equal import, but very different emotional weights.
Yeah. I mean, do we sacrifice mom's birthday party? It could have lasting effects throughout the quadrant.
Good. I mean, this is a fun kind of establishing moment. Like, it kind of seems like a, how the fuck is this even a scene?
Yeah.
Until you realize that it's kind of the linchpin to the whole episode.
Yeah.
Quark is very interested in taking a more active role in Club Resistance. And so he leaves his conversation with Morn to chase down the Major, and the first project of Club Resistance in this episode is going to be Spring Rom from the Pokey.
You ready?
Now
right now.
And so they're heading to Odo's quarters to see if they can talk some sense into their betrayer.
Kira and Quark roll up on Odo's condo, and there's a doorman, and he's Jem Hadar.
Odo's the only guy in the game that gets an armed guard for when he's smashing a babe in his hotel room.
Yeah, he doesn't put a sock on the door handle. He puts a Jem Hadar on it.
And a Bajoran security guy?
It's like Elf on a Shelf. It's Jem Hadar on the door handle while you smash.
Yeah, Odo's having a great big fuck fest. A three-day long fuck fest, like a fuck fest that is so great that he has completely lost track of time.
That just sounds tiring.
Founders are not to be disturbed.
That just sounds like too much.
Yeah, and it's a conventional fuck fest, Adam.
Because when we cut to the inside, Odo and Change Leader have done original recipe sex the way solids do.
Yeah.
Which is to say awkward and disappointing for one of them.
Only a shadow of what we experience in the Great Link.
What do you mean? We did it for 3 days.
My last girlfriend always said I was pretty good.
Maybe you could sit on my face for like 2 days. See if that does it. The blocking in this scene is crucial because they are blocked in a way that two disappointed lovers often are in a TV show or a movie. They're sitting facing the opposite way on the bed.
Yeah.
And they're both like hands on knees, kind of slumped over.
Yeah. Not really connecting about how that went.
The added element to this whole thing is not only the physical disappointment that you can just read in the room, it's that Change Leader asks Odo questions like a mom asking a teen son about sex.
Yeah, it's so fucked up and gross.
It's skin crawly awkward.
It is like porn video streaming site, like, God, why is all of this about a mom and a teen son?
Yeah, it's wild.
Anyways.
It's very uncomfortable. Odo is fairly upset about the passage of time, like Change Leader tells him, you know, it's been 3 days, and he's like,
what? I have 4,000 emails in my inbox. God damn it.
I've never lasted that long. I mean, wow. Change Leader sort of admonishes him about the concern that he's showing toward his email, for example, toward everything in his life. Like, what do you care? You're better than this. You're better than all of it.
You've been living with the solids concept of time for too long.
It's an attitude that he seemed very comfortable with in the last episode, right?
Yeah.
When Kira came to him and was like, why the fuck did you let Rom get stuck in that Jeffries tube? And
yeah.
He says, like, what do I care? It doesn't matter to me.
Yeah.
You're the solids. I flow all over the place. You just sit there and stink it up. You're the number twos. I'm a number one.
Change Leader kind of ends the argument with,
you are a changeling. You are timeless.
What are you worried about time for?
Yeah.
And I'm like, with how little I care about most things, am I timeless, Ben?
Boy, I like the idea of ending an argument with more sex.
Yeah, and that's what they do. You know what? You wanted to start with a hand job?
Golden hand job.
Yeah.
Wow.
Later on DS9, Wayun looks at one of Zial's paintings and can't tell if it's any good. Just like us. Wayun is just like us.
We were born without any sense of aesthetics.
Yeah.
And so was Wayun.
Yeah.
All Vorta have no aesthetic sense, which explains their haircuts, I think.
That's true. Yeah. I love that he tries.
Yeah, he's really given it his all.
Yeah.
This was a gift from Gul Dukat. It's one of Zial's prize-winning paintings, and he just can't really tell what is good or bad about it.
And Kira, in her defense, is not interested in litigating this with him whatsoever.
Yeah.
Wayun asks her, because Bajorans are generally known as those who are the most adept at such things.
Yeah, they're really speaking to each other across a pretty wide gulf.
Yeah.
And he is kind of the next tree that she's going to try and bark up.
It's about Rom.
Oh, yes.
She had a friend on the ruling council of the station who is now totally preoccupied with banging change leader.
Yeah.
So she's going to try for Wei-Yun because she'd rather not strike up a conversation with Gul Dukat if she can avoid it.
Her best friend got a girlfriend and it sucks.
And the news that she gets from Wei-Yun is that Ram is he is not just locked up, he is he's on death row.
One of the qualities I really like about Wei-Yun is how he gives bad information. He's like, yeah, he's going to be executed. He did a very bad thing. And not only that, it's going to be an example to others.
That's just how we deal with terrorists. Yeah. You know that.
He does not read the room.
If anybody here was ever thinking about getting involved in any kind of terrorism or whatever, that person should know that.
We cut almost immediately to Rom's cell where Quark and Lita are discussing the circumstance, and why this isn't a conjugal visit has got to be on Rom's mind, right?
Yeah, especially because Lita appears to be wearing the dress she married him in.
It's a relatively chaste neckline that happens to end above the nipples, and that makes it pretty unique among Lita's wardrobe choices.
but yeah, like if you were heading to a conjugal visit, wearing the wedding, like that might be one of the few contexts in which a woman took her wedding dress out of the closet and put it on and headed out into the world, right?
Yeah.
Like, I'm sure my wife has no interest in ever wearing her wedding dress again.
Yeah. Right? Rom's pessimism here, like they're there to cheer him up. But it's not like they have good news or anything, but Rom's pessimism is really upsetting to Lita.
Yeah. I mean, she's super bummed out. He's asking for a rock hammer in the jail cell. Cuts to voiceover. I must admit, I didn't think much of Rom the first time I laid eyes on him. Looked like a Jemadar fart would blow him over. That was my first impression of the Ferengi.
Yeah. That's great. I feel like people are going to, like, you'll do a bit, and then I'll say, yeah, that's great. Uh-huh. And I think the prevailing wisdom is that I'm making fun of you for that. No, like, that's my sincere feeling, is that that's great. I have nothing to add.
It's like instead of no but, instead of yes and, it's just, yeah, that's great. Show over.
I'm not going to top that. It just so happens, Ben, that you're the only one with a quality Morgan Freeman impression. You think we're actually going to do dueling Morgan Freeman impressions on The Greatest Generation? Quality, do you really think that?
Quality is an extremely generous term to describe my Morgan Freeman impression.
I'm shocked you'd even want to do one. Lita offers free labor in exchange for Quark's effort to spring Rom from jail.
God, I thought that this was such funny writing, the idea that Quark gets off on the negotiation so much that he gets distracted from the fact that they're talking about breaking his brother out of jail.
And like Lita isn't already working for starvation wages. Like, how much is he actually saving on that deal?
Right.
But Rom isn't into this.
No.
Rom seems... like,
Rom is down for the cause.
He really is. He wants Quark to finish the job that he started.
Yeah.
He wants, like, Rom threw one of his shoes
sabot
into the machine. He wants Quark to throw the other one in.
Yeah.
Because they need to destroy the anti-graviton beam that the station is going to use to take down the self-replicating mines.
Yeah. And when you say shoes, of course, you mean wooden shoes.
I do.
Hence the word sabotage.
I need another drink.
Yeah, get a couple more drinks going. Well, I talk about the fact that Kira goes to see Zial, who is hard at work on her art, because Kira doesn't want to go see Dukat. And Dukat's not going to listen to Kira, you know?
Must be pretty nice. Zial's got a bunch of time to do her art because she doesn't have to work for a living.
Yeah. You know, like the last time we saw Kira and Zial was about the end of their friendship / quasi mother-daughter relationship. Zial's kind of like the liberal daughter of a conservative politician out there in the world, not like living the awful worldview of her shitheel father.
Yes.
And so Kira is like, hey, listen, like, I know that we've had our differences, but like, there's something really bad going on here. Like, can you do anything? Can you talk your father out of this awful shit he's pulling?
There are a number of really fun editing choices in this episode, and this is one of them. Smash cut to that conversation.
I want you to free Rom.
You're joking.
What's great about this is Zial is describing Dukat as he is not. Zial is like, you're a great man. Everyone needs to know that. And this is a way that you can tell them. And Dukat's like, I'm a piece of shit. No one thinks that I'm a good man. Why would I ever do this?
Damar says that same thing, though, in this episode. Yeah. Like, he's a man of death. Like somehow Dukat doesn't believe his own cult of personality.
Yeah.
Which you wonder about people with cult of personality. Like, do they... Because definitely some people with it,
mm-hmm.
like, are drinking their own Kool-Aid.
Oh, sure.
Dukat does not seem to be one of those people. He's got, like, imposter syndrome, despite being a...
It makes me happy that the very powerful also have that, and it's not just something that we're stricken with. The normals.
I mean, it's not a syndrome in our place. We're actual imposters.
Zial is pissed that this isn't working.
Yeah. And pissed that her relationship with him doesn't cause him to change his mind. Like, he's basically choosing country over family or ideology over her.
This is an example of the opposite of what will eventually be asked of Zial. He's never asked to pivot to what's good for most people.
Right.
Instead, he asks people to make sacrifices for the benefit of Cardassia.
And not even the benefit of Cardassia, but the benefit of him personally.
Yeah.
And he, you know, dresses that in the clothing of the benefit of Cardassia.
Back at Quark's, there is discussion of a breakout plan. Breaking Rom out of prison using Nausicaans.
Yeah. And apparently Quark has already made like a down payment on this plan.
It would be a bloodbath. And I am grieving the episode that we do not get here that actually goes through with this plan.
Man, that would be great.
You have no Gramba.
I'm really interested in how characters move and are moved around a story like this. And this is a scene where that happens and it's motivated because this conversation between Kira and Quark is changed when Damar shows up and tells Kira to basically fuck off.
A freighter loaded with tamarind grain is due within the hour. See to it that Cargo Bay 5 is ready to receive it.
And she does.
Yeah.
Because Damar's there to do some drinking.
Afternoon, everybody.
Damar!
And Quark knows that when Damar wants to drink, there's usually a reason why.
Yeah, Quark has taken up a little bit of a routine with Damar where he plies him with the fancy canard and gets information out of him. And the information he gets in this scene is that there is a 1 week timer starting now on the minefield coming down.
It'll be 1 week till you find the key. Tested the plan and said it's working. 5 days till the mines come down, but it's still too late for Rom to be sorry.
Oh, man.
I love the whip pan here. The whip pan might be my favorite part of this episode, and they do it twice because like Damar leans in. He's like, the mind destruction plan is going far better than is generally known. and the camera whip pans across the bar because he's checking to see if anyone's in earshot. And then we come back. I fucking love that.
Yeah. Yeah. He gives like the hairy eyeball to a Bajoran guy that's sitting there who immediately takes the message and gets out of there.
An in-camera edit that isn't an edit at all. It's just a move like that.
It's a very rare use of camera for Star Trek to turn the camera and turn it back like that. The camera in Star Trek is omniscient, right? It's like...
It's not a character.
It's not a character. And when a camera pans back after it's panned, you know, when you pan back right after you've panned left in one unbroken shot, the hand of the operator is revealed in a shot
like
that.
It's true. It breaks the wall.
And I don't know why it works in this scene, but it does.
What are you doing now? Meanwhile, The fleet has assembled outside of Starbase whatever, and the fleet is big.
The fleet is bonkers big.
Yeah.
I think that at some point they say like 600 ships.
Who wouldn't want to join this fleet, Ben? Gowron, evidently.
Yeah, they have not succeeded in convincing the Klingons to join this party.
Yeah.
This kind of feels like a keeping the Klingons out so that they can ride into the rescue later kind of move.
I was thinking they wouldn't want to share the credit.
Yeah.
Or the station.
Right. Oh, like they would, there would be like a, like an issue of ownership if the Klingons were involved in reconquering it.
Kind of feel that way.
The Klingons might feel that way.
If the station is of the strategic importance that Sisko is saying, like that would be a low-key, really shrewd move.
Yeah. So they send General Martok off to make this case with Worf, right?
Yeah.
And I think that that's what makes me feel like they're going to show up with a fleet in the next episode.
Yeah, I mean, I think they're fairly explicit. Like, they're going to go twist Gowron's arm. They're going to return with good news and ships.
Yeah, but this is starting to look like it's going to be a real Hail Mary, like, no matter what. What do you think is in all those green and blue drinks that everybody's drinking? Is it just water with food coloring, or do you think that they, like, get apple juice and put something in it?
I think there's a philosophy, and that philosophy has to do with the person who set designs for you. If you're a person who cares about the comfort of your actors and the knowledge that they're going to be doing take after take, drinking a thing,
yeah,
I think you're going to try to make sure it tastes good.
Yeah.
If it tastes like shit, like I think you're going to be disliked right in any production.
Yeah.
That's what I think.
Speaking of drinks in Quark's bar, Kira and Quark, now knowing that there's basically a ticking bomb on the entire war,
right,
are having a conversation about how, like, hey, like we need to figure out what to do with this. And, you know, like Quark has basically demurred of attempting to complete Rom's work. He's A, reasonably afraid that he won't be able to get through the security field. And also, like, Quark is not a engineer.
He's not.
So,
but I think we've known many good bartenders, and I think there are some compatible skills there.
Yeah. This is the scene where they decide, like, okay, what we need to do, in fact, is get a message to Starfleet. And for some reason, Jake shows up with a perfect plan for getting a message to Starfleet.
Ben, I have a song now. The song is called For Some Reason, Jake. And you said it exactly like I hoped you would. Resisting all day, things are going your way. When along comes Jake Sisko, a wrench in your plan. Assume that he is the man. Wei Yun laughs at Jake Sisko. He's got bad ideas and he's got no chill. Should be with his dad, but he's got stories to kill. Why he's there, the reasons are nil. Because for some reason, Jake Sisko.
It's me, Jake!
I like it.
That's nice.
That was great. I'm glad we're getting a little more songs on the show.
Mm-hmm.
I always like our songs.
I think Jake needed a song, and it needed to be For Some Reason, Jake Sisko.
This is like a scene that in some ways makes up for a lot of Jake's dumb bullshit in previous episodes this season, because
I mean, if the viewer could see the look I'm making, I don't know. This is not Jake motivated. This is Jake seeing a couple of things in the distance and putting them together.
Yeah, but it does, like, they have done a lot to establish that Jake would have a hookup like this.
Yeah.
And that Jake would be dumb enough to walk into the conversation not realizing how key that hookup would be.
Yeah.
So I like it. And I like that the way they conceal the messages in the ribbon on the package.
Yeah, on Morn's birthday gifts for his mom.
Yeah, this is another one of those smash cuts, right?
I thought Morn wasn't going to go to the birthday. This was a big shock to me. Why change his mind?
Wow, you focused on different parts of this episode than I did.
Really did. I thought for sure he'd just stay at the bar. You know what's messed up is we don't really see what the gift is.
Yeah. What does a Morn get his mom?
Carpenter pants. Back on the starbase, Sisko convinces Admiral Beltbuckle to go in early before the fleet backup arrives.
Yeah, they're waiting on a bunch of ships that are not going to be here in time.
I just want to say this. Whether or not Sisko's plan is effective, I don't like Admiral Beltbuckle just taking this advice for action. Admiral Beltbuckle seems pretty feckless and bad at his job. Like, what are the decisions that Admiral Beltbuckle makes that anyone else does? It feels like Sisko is leading from behind.
Yeah. Does Admiral Beltbuckle have other adjutants that are also helping him?
I don't know. You hope so.
I mean, if somebody is going to be a feckless idiot leader, you'd like to think that there's somebody smart pulling the strings behind the throne.
Someone is going to throw themselves on the nuclear football.
Right. That's what Sisko's there for.
The convincing goes well because Beltbuckle's down.
Beltbuckle gives it the thumbs up.
Do it.
And they start to saddle up.
It's important that they go through with this mission quickly because back on DS9, Dukat is demonstrating their ability to kill the mines to a Weyoun that is unable to see them.
This was a mechanic that I feel like the last episode kind of implied was going to be like all in one go. There is going to be no more minefield.
Yeah.
But what this is they have to individually take out the self-replicating part of each mine one by one.
Yeah.
And then they can blow up the whole minefield.
Yep.
Which, you know, like, I guess the Federation doesn't know that. So they wouldn't necessarily think to just blow up the whole minefield. Like if they blew up some of the minefield early, they would self-replicate and all their self-replication units
would ruin all the work. Yeah, yeah.
Right? You could reset this. You could hit the snooze button on the problem. But I guess they don't know that. So I guess it's not a plot hole. That's what I'm trying to say.
The plot hole has self-replicated itself, and now there's no plot hole anymore.
Oh, shit, dog. Gul Dukat takes great umbrage with Weyoun here because Weyoun is not totally jazzed about the destruction of the minefield. And Dukat is like, this has been like the only thing you cared about for the entire time we've been here. What gives?
Weyoun can't see it.
Yeah. He has bad eyesight.
You can't appreciate a thing you can't see.
Damar comes in and he's got some fleet movement intelligence. They've clocked all of these Federation ships gathering at Starbase 3, blah, blah, blah. And Gul Dukat and Weyoun are like, what do you think they're doing? And Damar's like, well, I don't know what they're doing, but there's a lot of them.
Why have those fleets gathered there?
I don't know, Margo.
It's crazy how many different things Dukat can think about at once. He's not only on Project Mine, he's on the jangly keys of the fleet deployment, but also he's got to fix the Zial thing.
Yeah.
And it's a good thing he's got Damar for that, because he's going to, among the three main issues he's working, he's going to outsource the Zial problem to Damar.
Yeah. Let's see. Military issues. Okay, I've got a Gull working for me. Maybe I'll have him patch my relationship with my daughter up.
In any other show, in any other genre, Damar would be like a smooth operator and Damar and Zial would fall in love as a result of this.
Right, right.
But you know that's just never on the table here.
So Gul Dukat actually orders Damar to go try and smooth things over. And we cut to the cargo bay where I guess Kira has been given the job of like readying a cargo bay for a shipment of MREs for the troops or something.
Yeah, it seems like pretty menial shit for her.
Yeah. And
she not allowed to work at ops anymore?
We haven't really seen her there much, have we?
Yeah.
Zial's the first one we see, and we kind of imagine that the next person around the corner is gonna be Damar, but it's Kira.
Yeah.
And they're having this conversation. And it's that weird position of somebody going through a breakup where you're like, yeah, like it sucks that you're going through this breakup, but the person you broke up with is a dirtbag and it's good.
No one liked them.
Yeah. And that's kind of the tone that Kira is taking when Damar walks in.
Yeah. Kira is great at that tone.
Right now you're angry and hurt, but that's going to pass.
Damar's pitch is not unexpected. Like, he makes the nationalism be a daughter of Cardassia pitch.
Right.
Almost and totally independent of, like, Dukat as her father at all.
Not exactly flowing over with emotional intelligence, Damar.
Yeah.
He comes in with the PowerPoint presentation of do it for God and country.
Yeah.
And Zell's like, are you fucking joking? And Damar, you know, then resorts to just trying to like haul her off by, you know, grabbing her upper arm. And that's when
Kira Marty McFlies him.
Yeah. She puts herself right in the middle of it and beats the fuck out of Damar.
Kira's fight with Damar here is very much like a Mike Tyson's punch out fight, because Damar remains standing, and then like you can almost see the stars appear over his head as Kira is like bopping him.
Yeah. The first punch definitely doesn't seem to daze him. It's like, yeah. Oh no. But then you realize like,
he's out,
already a mess.
He's out on his feet for sure.
And she's got 8 more roundhouse kicks to deliver to his chin.
Yeah. By the time he's taken down, they get out of there.
Yeah.
Pretty fast.
We have one last little chit chat between Admiral Beltbuckle and Sisko before Sisko rides off to war. Sisko getting back into the command chair after one episode of not. And
the soup hasn't even gone cold.
I mean, Dax has been sitting on top of it, you know.
Yeah, that's fair.
She's been mother henning that thermos. And yeah, Sisko's like reading scripture before going to battle, which is kind of a, you know, like we're talking about character change. That's a big deal.
Yeah, he's coming around to who he is and what he represents. And I don't know, if you have a post-war vision of your life and it doesn't involve Starfleet in any way, not even a little bit, I don't know, Sisko, maybe keep that to yourself. Maybe it not tell.
No, he says like I'm going to go wherever you guys send me, but my home will be Bajor when I go on shore leave, Bajor.
I don't feel like Sisko's a company man here. I don't think he's a daughter of Starfleet.
Yeah.
I'll say that.
I mean, I think that when he walks out of this room, Admiral Beltbuckle's like, wow, there goes one of the craziest motherfuckers we've ever hired off to his certain demise.
I am I, Don Quixote, the Lord of La Mancha.
Yeah. Admiral Beltbuckle's like, well, I mean, he's been a problem for a while, but not for much longer.
Yeah.
It's
going to be nice not hearing that guy walk around talking about being the prophet. Emissary of the prophets anymore?
We're going to be using one of those scrapers to get him off of the little D next week.
Morn.
Dear sweet. Morn.
You near, buddy?
Morn.
Stop. Hammer time.
Nog comes out of some room on the little D. New uniform, Adam. Adam is making his face. This is that moment. He bumps into the chief. He outranks the chief now.
I hadn't realized things were going so bad.
Scary, isn't it?
I hate this. I don't like it at all. And mostly because I think, like, I guess it's because of his work study internship that he's been given the field promotion to ensign. It felt more monumental when Wesley put on the uniform because it felt like he did more.
Right.
I don't know. It's complicated. Like, it's great to see how proud O'Brien is of him.
Yeah.
But I wish this was earned a little more. Like, and I'm not diminishing all of the many contributions that Nog has made out in the field, because he clearly has, but it's insane that he's been made to make those out in the field.
Right. Well, it's a field commission. It's kind of like acting ensign, right?
Yeah.
Like, yeah. I think that in wartime, this kind of thing happens all the time where it's like, fuck, like this unit got blown apart and we need a lieutenant or something.
Like, what's he going to do? Go back to the academy? No, right. Like he's useful out here. So I get it.
Yeah.
Mixed feelings, I would say, though.
You wondered about what was going on with the captain's soup, Adam. Dax literally says, I kept it warm when Sisko comes out on the bridge of the little D to command this mission.
I don't think
she's talking about the seat.
I think that's gross. I think if you're the captain and you sit down on the captain's chair and it's still warm, I think that's a bad feeling.
Yeah.
You don't like that.
You don't like hot seating the captain's chair.
Yeah.
It's got to be kind of a bad feeling for Dax too, right? Because she's like really kicked a lot of ass as captain.
She has.
She's not.
Look at all of her power cells in the mess.
Yeah. They look like great big long boobs.
Yeah. How many of those are Dax's and how many of those are Cisco's?
Yeah. Let's have a power cell measuring contest.
Yeah. So the fleet rolls out, Ben, and it is massive. We see so many of every kind of ship here.
Yeah.
But I think the thing that you and I both know is that the Hood would never be party to this.
No, the Hood is just orbiting Earth. And they're drinking and partying on the Hood.
You know, the taps at Risa, they do need some servicing. I think it's important to make sure that the whole of the Federation,
right,
is aided by the fleet.
You know, if you don't harvest all of the beautiful tropical fruit on Risa,
yeah,
it's just gonna go bad.
There's even like some sovereign class ships in this fleet. Like,
yeah,
It's a couple of everything. It's, yeah, big time.
Yeah, I really liked it. So back on the station, Dukat and Wayun are, it's washing over them that this Federation attack on the station is imminent. And Wayun puts together that like the Federation is onto them. They know that the minefield is not long for this world. And he says, like, all right, like, well, we'll just have to get enough ships to destroy them. And it's a bit of a back and forth, like, we're pulling ships off of, you know, frontline attacks that we really need to press right now. But there's one priority. The wormhole is the whole game.
Yeah.
This is a conversation that is interrupted when Damar walks in, totally swelled up and bloodied.
My shoulder doesn't hurt very much, but my face does.
I really liked this because, like, you see people get in fistfights in movies and television all the time and then, like, having, like, a little nick or,
right,
a slight discoloration or something. If you get punched, your fucking face swells up.
Yeah, he's swole and he's purple.
Yeah, he looks like somebody who got his ass whooped.
Yeah.
And nobody sympathizes with him.
I think it's great that Damar's first stop is Dukat instead of taking it upon himself to chase Kira down.
Yeah.
I think that is very emblematic of the whole chain of commandification of things on the station right now.
Right.
I think ordinarily that would be what happened. Like, Damar would find Kira and blow her out an airlock.
Right. I love that they've like made the politics feel real enough that,
yeah,
Damar can't do that.
Yeah, and the condescension of a Dukat talking to Damar in this moment about, like, oh, Damar, what happened to your face? It's so withering.
Yeah.
This meeting that Damar and Dukat are having is skewing a little more toward the personal than Wayun would like, given the very serious circumstances they're in.
Yeah.
And Wayun attempts to, like, refocus them.
I feel like Wayun could just cite the fact that it was very inappropriate for Dukat to send one of his military subordinates to handle a family matter.
It's not a good look for Dukat. But Wayun seems like he's a pretty forgiving manager in the scheme of things.
Yeah.
He seems to be super chill.
Yeah. The brutality of the Founders is not transmitted through him. He is the Darth Vader to the Founders. Palpatine. I mean, the next scene sort of establishes that this particular edition of Wayun is kind of a fuck up, because we cut to the upper level of the promenade where Odo and Change Leader.
I'm just gonna freshen up our beverages here with some ice.
Please do.
How are you feeling, Ben?
I'm feeling nice. I'm feeling good. I'm not Mournhammered, but I'm definitely enjoying my afternoon.
Mournhammered was never the intent. Just pleasantly afternoon,
yeah,
hammered.
Odo and Changeleader are talking about the solids, and it's this kind of like imperialist, like noblesse oblige that the Changeleader is writing for. Like, we have to guide these simple people. Like, they are number twos and we are number ones.
And it's communicated visually because they're up above on the promenade and they're looking down on everyone else.
Yeah. They look like ants.
Yeah.
This is when Wayun walks up, Odo takes his leave, and
you're doing a wonderful job with Odo.
Wayun kind of shows his whole ass to Change Leader at this point.
Meaning what?
She's like, oh no, we're the condescending ones. You're not the condescending one.
You don't get to do that here. it's great to see this gear on Change Leader because it feels like it's been a while.
Yeah.
Because she's been so kind and encouraging to Odo. When she snaps into that condescension that she has reserved for everyone else,
yeah,
it's like, whoa, oh yeah, I remember.
And it's such like apex condescension too, because it's not like, she's not actually mad at him. She's like, you can't help it. You're just a simple little,
yeah.
You're just a simple little number two.
Yeah, it's a great scene.
When Odo gets down onto level one of the promenade, he finds that they are not ants, but people that are all roughly of the same stature as him, one of whom is Major Kira, who he sees kind of across the way. He races to try and catch up with her, but she gets on an elevator before he can catch her. So he has to do the thing where you run down the stairs really fast.
Kira does not hit the hold door button on the lift. No. Very intentionally.
She Larry Davids the fuck out of him.
Yep.
And when he catches her in the hallway later on, she is not super enthusiastic about having a conversation with him.
Kira updates Odo with the news because he's not been watching it for the last 3 days. In a way that neither of our parents would ever know.
If I don't catch Rachel Maddow every night, the whole thing could fly apart at the handles.
All the news is bad. Everything Kira says is bad.
Rom is going to get executed. The butthole is going to get opened up. They're going to get dumped on relentlessly by Tix.
What can't you do here, Ben? You can't give this soft-ass apology that Odo gives in this moment. This apology does not go well.
No, you can't get your conscience back at this point.
I'm sorry if you feel that way about the way I've spent my last 3 days.
It has come to my attention recently that tweets I sent when I was a younger, more immature man were harmful and hurtful to people. That was never my intention.
We're good now, right? That was all that was necessary?
Was that okay? Was it good that I had my wife standing slightly next to me?
Oof. Kira rightly does not accept this apology.
Yeah.
Back with the fleet, it's the situation where we're going on a road trip and people on the road trip keep having car trouble.
Yeah.
And keep like peeling off into a service station.
Yeah.
It's a fleet of jalopies, Ben.
These trips are not in great shape. And
you're filled with a confidence when you see this fleet of hundreds of ships. You're like, yeah, this is going to work out great.
There's a bunch of galaxy class starships here.
Yeah.
Like these are the good ships.
Yeah. What we know numerically is that when the Jem'Hadar fleet shows up, O'Brien says they've picked up 1,254 of them, which is said is a 2-to-1 advantage of the Federation ships. So we know that there's roughly like 620 and change Federation ships there, of which, what, like 8 to 10 are jalopies?
Right, are really busted.
Yeah, look, a lot of people ignore the check engine light. Most of the time, it's just a loose gas cap. You can fix that fairly easily by yourself.
Right.
But for more serious matters, for something like an O2 sensor,
yeah,
you got to take that into the service station.
Whatever, you know,
that's going to affect your mileage, Ben.
It's going
to
be.
You're not going to make it to the battle.
Not going to make it to the battle. And that is our dun-dun-dun.
Yeah.
Because it is 600 Starfleets flying into the teeth of
625 starships going into battle.
How do you beat a Jem'Hadar?
This episode had all the songs.
Yeah, some of the worst songs we've ever done.
Yeah, Sisko is like, the button is like he's pushing in his chips. And by chips, I mean ships.
Yeah.
He doesn't ask Admiral Beltbuckle about this.
No.
He knows he's outnumbered and he's going in anyway.
To be continued.
You really want to do this? Here, now, okay, let's do it,
Did you like this episode?
As much as I like the episode and like the awe that the giant fleet makes me feel, like I still, when I really think about it, and this is happening a lot in a lot of recent DS9 episodes, like, the immediate feeling after the ep is, ah, awesome.
Yeah.
And then when I think about it, I'm like, what really happened here? And in this episode, what really happened was Sisko had a plan. He sold the plan. He assembled the units and then they rode off.
Right.
It's basically it, because nothing really changed with Odo. Nothing really changed with Kira. Nothing changed with Rom being in jail.
Oh, I think Odo kind of realized that he was being a real prick in the last episode.
Cool. Like, I'm making the jack-off motion right now. Like, Odo's realization means nothing to me.
Yeah.
Because he's not doing anything.
Yeah, he hasn't done any action. It's
exactly.
Just, it's just he's gone on the emotional journey, but now he needs to make it right.
And the only way he can make it right is by murdering Damar and Dukat.
Yeah, just
at ops.
Using his crazy changeling powers to just shred all of the Cardassians.
Which he could at any moment.
You know what he could do is just go around murdering every Jem'Hadar and they wouldn't fight back.
He could plug up their little milk holes. He could twist their milk teat shut.
Yeah, he could do that. Hey, Adam.
It's that, Ben.
Did you find yourself a drunk Shimoda?
Incredible.
Drunk Shimoda.
My drunk Shimoda this episode is Whip Pan. You never get it. You rarely see it.
Yeah.
It's usually a corny ass joke.
The camera is a character in this episode.
Whip Pan's my Shimoda.
Wow.
I think there's a category of Shimoda that might be technique.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that this category has had a lot of Shimodas, but I'm going to throw my episode quarter into that machine this time around.
Nice.
I think it must be respected and recognized. I love a choice like this. This is Winrich Kolbe, who directed this ep, and he's done a lot of DS9 eps.
Yeah.
It feels like he stepped out a little bit.
Yeah.
Visually, because like he's one of the foundational multi-episode directors of Deep Space Nine.
Definitely.
Like I think he got a little fun with it, and I'm here for it.
Yeah, same.
You can't do a whip pan every episode or even every season, but use this way. Love it. What about you?
Morn is my drunk Shimoda in this episode.
Yeah.
You can't tie a ribbon on a present wearing gloves.
Impossible.
They go close on his gloved hands trying to tie that ribbon? No way. No way.
Is Morn just not that smart also?
I don't know. I don't know what the deal is. We don't know Morn.
Yeah, we don't.
Everybody else knows Morn, but we don't know Morn.
He's Silent Lenny.
Yeah, he's Silent Lenny, except for he's super talkative by reputation.
Do we know if Lenny has a giant cock? Like, what if that was the...
Yeah, he calls it the hooded fat of the land.
Those are the parts that were edited out of Mice and Men. All the references to Lenny's giant cock.
Yeah, yeah. Mm.
That's why you can read that book in middle school.
Gotta get that gold press lacquer. Get that
gold press lacquer.
Am I right?
Yeah.
Am I right?
Moms can't live with them. Can't find a great gift for them. It's madness, and it's the same every year. Mother's Day comes around, and it's like, what's it gonna be this year? Another robe? Another candle? Slippers? A sweater? Flowers? We've got to do better than that, right? Well, you can, and it's actually the best gift you could possibly give a loved one, an Aura frame. Now, we have a policy to only do ads on our show for things that we actually like and use, and I gotta tell you, the Aura frame is probably the best gift I've ever given. The folks I've given an Aura frame to love it, and I love it too. Because when you give an Aura frame, you're not just giving a person a bunch of old pictures, you're giving them new pictures. Every time you send one, do it. Right now, Aura has a great sale for Mother's Day. Viewers can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. That's AuraFrames.com, and the code is SCARVES at checkout to show your support for the show. Terms and conditions apply.
Mother's Day is coming up, and one of the best gifts you can give a mom that you might share a bed with is doing some yard work downstairs, if you know what I mean, with Manscaped. This season, make sure you groom your carpets and your drapes with the leader in below the waist grooming. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVES at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVES at manscaped.com. Nothing like a little spring cleaning in your pants to let the mother of your children know how much you appreciate her continuing to put up with you.
Hey, when you listen to podcasts, it really just comes down to whether or not you like the sound of everyone's voices. My voice is one of the sounds you'll hear on the podcast Dr. Game Show, and this is the voice of co-host and fearless leader Joe Firestone.
This is a podcast where we play games submitted by listeners, and we play them with callers over Zoom we've never spoken to in our lives. So that is basically the concept of the show. Pretty chill.
So take it or leave it, bucko. And here's what some of the listeners have to say.
It's funny, wholesome, and it never fails to make me smile.
I just started listening and I'm already binging it. I haven't laughed this hard in ages. I wish I'd discovered it sooner.
You can find Dr. Game Show on MaximumFun.org.
Video games can make you laugh.
They can make you cry.
They can even make you sing.
We're the hosts of Triple Click.
It's a podcast about video games.
This is an exciting time for new games, from Diablo to Final Fantasy.
From Starfield to Street Fighter.
From Zelda to, oh, who are we kidding? We're just going to talk about Zelda.
Whether you play games or you just like hearing about them, we've got you covered.
Find us at MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Bye.
All right, Adam, why don't you fire up the game of buttholes, the will of the prophets, and I will tell you what our next episode is going to be.
Well, it should be no secret by now that we are currently on a Quarks Bar episode. I'm sure you can hear the difference. That square is square 18. It's because we hit a space butthole and slid all the way down here. Just ahead, I don't know, another space butthole we could possibly hit. Dangers abound.
Okay.
In this part of the board.
Fuck. Well, next episode is season 6, episode 6. And that's what we will be reviewing next time. And the description here is, when the minefield is soon to be demolished, Sisko leads a mission to take back Deep Space Nine. So, almost exactly the same description as this episode.
That is what a waste of a description.
Yeah.
Ben, I'm not indicting you.
I haven't done this in years, but do you want to hear what Netflix has to say?
Yeah, I actually would.
Okay. Season 6, episode 6. With the minefield that protects the Federation soon to be demolished, Sisko leads what appears to be a suicide mission to take back Deep Space Nine. Rare agreement.
You know what? I like the suicide mission detail of that one.
That's a little bit flowerier writing. Flowerier.
I wish that was the end of the episode we just watched. Is Dax turning to Sisko like,
it's suicide.
Yeah, they all tie their bandana around their head like they know they're sailing into their certain doom. This is a kamikaze.
They fill another probe with their wills.
Yeah. Shit, dog.
Yeah.
Wow. That's
big fun. I'm into it.
Well, that will be the next episode. And in the meantime, it's your roll.
You're required to learn as you play. Roll.
Ben, I have rolled a 5.
Chula! Did I win?
Hardly.
Which has hopped us over another space butthole and put us on the doorstep of a banger. We're on square 23, and it is a regular old episode.
Well, got a couple of thanks to give out here at the end of the show. Of course, thanks to all the people that have and will support, but also thanks to folks like Bill Tilly. Bill Tilly makes great collectible comedy trading cards about every episode of our show, every week. They always delight me. Every time I see those trading cards pop up in my Twitter feed, it is appointment twittering for me.
And you know what hat I never dislike seeing on top of my hat? Bill Tilly's hat.
Yeah, Bill Tilly always puts a solid hat on top of a hat. And you can find those using the hashtag GreatestGen or just by finding his account, Bill Tilly 1973. Adam's on Twitter at Cut for Time. I'm on there at Benjamin AHR.
You know who's also attempting to earn a living by doing internet work. It's Adam Ragusea.
Yeah.
He's over on YouTube. He's the guy who makes the music for The Greatest Generation.
Yeah, he made the amazing Cisco song that we have here on the show, and the Picard song that was the original inspiration. Several other pieces of original music for us as well.
So yeah.
Just search Adam Ragusea on YouTube. You're going to learn a lot of great cooking techniques for the home cook.
As we have. So with that, we'll be back at you next time with another great episode of Star Trek Deep Space Nine and an episode of The Greatest Generation Deep Space Nine, which restates the theme for today's episode in a slightly different way. Your wife's going to come home and she's going to be like, it stinks like podcast in here. What happened?
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.